So it's the top of the hour. We're waiting for Randy, Jamie, and Genevieve. So we'll give them just one more minute to join us, and then we'll begin with our grounding. Welcome, Jamie.
Hi, sorry I'm a little bit late.
Yeah, Randy is too, and then we'll get started.
Okay.
And let me just welcome him. Welcome, Randy.
Thank you.
So is there anyone that would love to ground us before we begin our 11th week?
It's Carla.
Hello. Okay, great. So if everyone else were mute.
Sorry?
Carla, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Okay, this is part of the breathing. Imagine your body from your hips till your collarbones like it's a glass. The glass that you fill with water. If you fill a glass with water, if you breathe in, you fill it from the bottom to the top, so from your hips to your collarbones, and then you breathe out, it's like you're drinking it, and it will empty from your hip bones. So I will give one call of breathing in and breathing out, and if you all will do it by yourself three more times, and that's it. So breathe in and fill the glass with water from your hip bones to your collarbone. And breathe out and empty the glass from your collarbones to your hip bones. You can usually do that three more times on your own face. Thank you.
Thank you, Carla. I apologize if I'm interrupting, but it's really challenging to hear you right now. So what I invite you to do is hang up and call back in again and hopefully have a clear connection. Do you mind doing that?
Me?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. No problem. Thank you. Okay. Welcome, everyone. Carla will be back with us in a moment. I hope you've had a great week. Randy will attest that after one day of pretend winter yesterday, now we're experiencing Indian summer, so that's always energizing for me. I would love to go around and share briefly four people, one win, and one challenge for your week. And then, you know, I'm always encouraging to keep it brief so we can get into our agenda. But if you have a bit of time, maybe just a sentence or two around, in addition to your win and challenge, how is your UBS manifesting? Who would like to start us off today?
It's Joyce.
Go ahead, Joyce.
Of course.
Go ahead, Joyce.
Lee, you can go next. I love it. Go ahead, Joyce.
I couldn't help it. Okay, my the good thing that I had this past week, it was very social. I had lots of great social events, visits with friends, giant parties, and then 2 days at the beach with really great friends. So that was great. However, it left me feeling a little bit strung out, tired, and I ignored a lot of the daily rituals that I do that keep me centered, like writing in my journal, my readings, meditating, and I really did not feel grounded at the end of all of this. And what was the other part of the question?
How's your UBS coming along?
Pretty good.
Okay.
Pretty good. I refined it a little bit. I did ask because, you know, I saw all these friends, so I asked and got a lot of feedback from them.
Great. So you actually shared your UBS with your five people from your circle of influence as the homework dictated.
Yes, I did.
Nice. Great. And so my invitation to you, Joyce, thanks for sharing, is how can you continue, and you don't have to answer this, it's just something to think about, how can you continue to find balance between the social aspects of your life and the rituals of your life?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you. Sue, would
Thank
you like
you.
To? You're welcome. Sue, would you like to go next?
Sure. I may have lost a client. But then I picked up a client yesterday that is really on the same page and very like-minded. So I had a challenge and then I had a win.
Wonderful. And your UBS?
Is great. Awesome.
Short and to the point. I love it. When one door closes, another one opens. And when I find myself in the place where I feel like I'm losing something, I just trust that the universe is giving me something that I need for better alignment. And so it's not always easy, but I'm glad that that worked out that way for you. Thank you.
That's what happened to me. Thank you.
Who would like to go next? Win a challenge and how your UBS is coming along.
This is Jamie.
Okay, you both can go, and we'll take these last two. So you guys decide who wants to go first.
Go ahead, Jamie.
Okay, I'll go. So let's see. My win this week, I guess, was feeling sort of things are moving nicely, slowly. The website is getting really close. My graphic designer is behind, but I think this week it should be up. So I'm feeling good about that. And so the SMART goals are being fulfilled little by little. So that's the overall. By the way, another win was we saw this documentary, Yogananda, this movie that's out.
Mm-hmm.
I highly recommend it. Just wonderful.
Awesome.
The challenge has been switching from, I got a new computer and moving over to from a PC to a Mac. It's just been time consuming and exhausting and expensive. I think I'm going to be happy, but it's really set me back a bunch of days. And my UBS is feeling good. I unfortunately didn't do the homework. I need to do that in the next day or two. I've worked on it, but I need to kind of present it to somebody else. So that's next. But I'm feeling pretty good about it, like where it's headed.
Wonderful. Thank you for sharing that documentary. I would love for you, if you don't mind, Randy, to send it out to the group, the spelling and the name of it, because it's powerful. I read the book. If you want to share, that would be great.
Of course, happy to.
Okay, thanks. Jamie.
My win probably
is the extraordinarily supportive relationship that has come about over the last 11 weeks with my buddy, Randy. I'm going to call it out in front of everybody because it really has been one of the greatest things about this course for me. And I really, really appreciate that, the support and the encouragement. And that ties directly to my UBS because it started somewhere, and with the assistance of my mentor buddy, it has become more and more consistent with my heart's truth, my authentic self, and that has just been a real gift. And the challenge in the midst of those two things has been to just continue to show up. I'm having a tremendous amount of physical difficulties that are impacting my yoga teacher training and my ability to practice yoga and a lot of other things in my life. And so it's been really difficult. It's been really hard. But I'm still here.
Well, that's a good thing.
So, yeah. So that's my challenge. It's just keep mm-hmm. showing up and make space for not getting things done. So that's been an interesting path.
Thanks, Jeannie. And appreciate you sharing your feelings about how the buddy system has worked for you. It's our hope that people will use each other as resources and support, and I'm really glad, I'm hopeful it works out, it's working out for everyone, but for you to really feel that that piece has been a strong ally in your growth and development through this program is wonderful. So thank you for sharing, and continue to rest and take care of your health.
Thanks.
Okay, you're welcome. All right, thanks everyone for your shares this week. I was telling Christine in the beginning, I just can't believe we're in week 11. It seemingly has flown by. So our agenda today is really all around change. And one thing that's permanent in life is change. So it's a big topic, and we're going to speak to it as it relates to our mentor coaching and as it relates to our yoga practice and as practitioners. So if everyone can turn in their manuals to page 187, please. And through these next few sections, we'll be really dialoguing and creating a conversation interactively, taking your questions, taking your comments and feedback as always. But on page 187, really it's just talking about, I compare this to working out or changing the fitness routine. When anytime you're engaged in a new endeavor, you know, whether it's a diet or a fitness routine or meditating or practicing yoga, you know, there's seemingly this, for lack of a better word, honeymoon sort of stage where everything is great and you're motivated and everything is new. And then all of a sudden we reach a plateau, and that's normal. So this section here talks about the patterns of new learning that our clients will go through and the four phases. So this leveling off that they're talking about here is really not to be misconstrued as an indication of a bad choice or as validation that the choice is not a correct fit. So you're cruising along with your client or in whatever new endeavor you've started for yourself, and all of a sudden you hit this plateau, and then it's really hard to get motivated, to be inspired, to continue on that path. So before we get into these four phases, can anyone briefly share with me an experience that they've had where they've hit a plateau and what that was like for
for them. No one's ever had an experience of trying something new and hitting a plateau in any endeavor.
Yes, Randy. I mean, really have to think about this because what I think about oftentimes are little projects that I take on rather than learning a new skill. So I'll just start with that and maybe something will come or somebody else will be triggered. But it's I get excited about new projects and I'll take them on and then it does fade a little bit and my interest gets moved to something else or something else comes in or it gets put on the back burner. So it's as much of a follow through and a commitment and making sure if I take something on, I can commit to it fully or at least make a decision to drop it if I really feel like I need to. But I definitely experience what it's like to be able to take something on and then midway through find it, it's lost its luster a little bit and I've moved on.
Mm. Thank you for that example, Randy. And it can be multiple things, multiple projects, one thing. It doesn't matter. The pattern really is the same. And then I think it's really important to reflect on our own patterns and how we show up for those projects or new things that we say in our minds we want to start but maybe don't see to fruition. And that's fine because maybe sometimes it's not aligned. So it's just a place to explore a little bit. So the first phase that they talk about here on page 187 is initial confusion. Christine, would you read number one for me, please?
Sure. Initial confusion often launches change and new learning. Awareness of the unfamiliar and uncertain registers as curiosity or even anxiety.
So what comes up for you in terms of our learning and how this would show up in your client? Like, how do you understand this piece in the context of our learning?
I think it brings to mind, and I'm not sure, quite sure it's relevant, but this is what pops into my head, so I will share it. My dad is actually in one of my yoga classes, and he's 75, and he's been diagnosed with dementia. And for him, like, change is bad. Change is really, really terrible for him. He actually has had anxiety his whole life, and we think that maybe some of this isn't dementia, but just overwhelming anxiety for him.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, well, first of all, how cool that your dad is in your class, right?
My mom makes him go.
But she doesn't come along with him.
She does.
Oh, she does. All right,
yeah.
Whole family. So, yeah, that could be sort of an example. And really what I think it's speaking to here is that anytime we bring in something new, it can be confusing. It can be confusing to really as deep as our central nervous system, creating new habits and patterns and neural pathways in the brain and in the body. And so that can be coupled with, when you're in that state, it can be coupled with uncertainty because it is unfamiliar. And in that place of uncertainty and unfamiliarity, that can create a place of anxiety. So initially, when any of us are starting something new, this is a phase that oftentimes clients are going to go through first. Would someone else, thank you, Christine, would someone else like to share a yoga parallel where they've been on their mat or teaching just in the studio and their student has, or you, has initial confusion maybe going into a new pose? It's Sue.
Okay. It, oh.
Go ahead. Who else is on the line?
This is Joyce.
Go ahead, Joyce.
Okay. Wow, why is this happening? Okay, well, on the yoga mat, I mean, anytime a new pose is introduced, I mean, there's all of that. The confusion, extreme anxiety, fear, and it doesn't feel right, it's kind of unfamiliar. So I experience that very often.
Great. Thanks, Joyce. Sue, did you want to add to that?
Well, I'm just very confused with the ball and curl pose that Core Power has. That confuses me immensely. Ball and curl.
Ball and crow. I've never heard of that. I've heard of crow pose.
Ball and curl? You have not heard of ball and curl pose in Core Power?
I have not. Genevieve, okay, have you? Okay, I think she's on mute. No, I haven't, but that doesn't matter if I have or have not, but what you're relating to is that particular asana will create some anxiety in people, and it sounds like it creates some anxiety in you.
Well, because it's really not an asana, so when they say ball and curl, then I just like, oh, I go into this, oh my gosh, ball and curl is not an asana.
I gotta find out what that is. Okay. All right. Thanks, Sue. Great. So you can see that, you know, we've been doing this all along, right? We're mirroring and bridging the strategies and skills and principles that we already know from yoga and use them to, in our role as a mentor coach. They are so, so similar. So, Joyce, let me just ask you real quick. As a teacher, what tools do you have to use with your student when they are in that place of initial confusion?
Well, you can see it. I mean, I'm not the teacher, but it's pretty obvious when someone is feeling anxious and confused. So you break it down into steps. You are supportive, make them know they're in a safe place, remind them that they have the strength and they have the skills because you've seen them do other things, and you break it down and get them through it.
Great. Thank you. That's exactly right. All right, so moving on to number two, increasing confidence. Genevieve, could you read number two for us, please?
Okay, increasing confidence, both with the experience of effectiveness and with positive feedback, constitutes the next phase.
Thanks. And would you be able to take it a step further and just talk a little bit about how confidence shows up in somebody that is on a new path, and it can be on or off the mat?
How confidence shows up with someone that's on my path?
No, the on or off the mat, either place. When someone when someone is on a new path, how does confidence support that path?
You have to believe in yourself before you have to be confident in what you're doing. Believe in yourself before you can actually do it, because if you don't feel confident, then you probably, you know, like that's a wall that's there for you that you may stifle you. So confidence, having confidence is really important. And, you know, so supporting somebody and helping them feel confident, feel that they have everything and all the tools and that they, you know, that you believe in them is really important.
Absolutely. And it's that positive feedback piece, right, as a coach and as a teacher that will help support your client and your student to reach those new levels of confidence. Great. Thanks, Genevieve.
Mm-hmm.
Jamie, would you take number three, please?
Mastery is the consistent experience of effectiveness and movement to a new level of excitement and validation into its own self-sustaining flow.
I love how flow is in quotation, in parentheses, in quotation marks. Okay. I'm a good, so tell me how this, in the context of our learning, how this applies. How do you understand this piece?
Well, from my own experience, I'm thinking first off about my practice of mindfulness and meditation, not just yoga, but it started with really meditation and how, you know, I moved through the first and the second, the initial confusion, increasing confidence, and then finally the mastery of it has, it's kind of like it makes what's required around the practice worthwhile. I'm not quite sure how to explain it any better than that.
No, that's great. I love what you said. It makes, you know, what is around the practice worthwhile. So I just want to clarify, I mean, mastery can sometimes have this huge, connotation of like expert, and we've reached all levels of learning, and that's not really the case. What I think they're trying to share here is that once you become consistent, and you experience effectiveness, that consistency and effectiveness will actually propel your client or your student to the next level. And in that next level, that next phase, they're getting excited. They're getting validated. And so in that space, that's sort of where the flow is created. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Thanks, Jamie. Can anyone else share a personal experience on or off the mat where they felt a sense of mastery in the way that I've tried, hopefully, to define it in this context?
This is Christine. It makes me think of when we were back in yoga teacher training. And initially, you know, we had to teach one pose to our classmates, and everyone in class was freaking out and, oh my gosh, it's going to be so hard. And by the end of the class, we were all teaching. We'd done our practice teaching. We were teaching for our sessions. We didn't know everything there was to know, but I feel like mastery is almost like you feel comfortable.
Right. Right. That's a great example. And so, when you're feeling comfortable, what's possible from that place?
If you're comfortable, you're going to feel confident. And I think you can go anywhere from there.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you. Thank you. Sue, would you please take number four for us?
Sue?
Yes, please.
Yes, hold on one second. You caught me in the bathroom. Hold on.
Oh!
Let me go down.
Mute.
Hey, hold on one second. I'm almost there. Hold on. I was on mute. Hold on. Oh, number four. Hold on. I'm right here. Number four. Entropy occurs when the excitement and invigoration of the learning curve, newness, and mastery level off or decline. You perceive what you recognize.
No, that's
recognize.
Good. That's good. That's good, Sue. That's
okay.
Four. That's okay. Cool.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you another question. So when I first, a couple years ago, came across this word, I'm like, what is that? So entropy, It is synonymous with
entropy,
chaos, and randomness, if anyone else is curious what that is. So, Sue, how do you understand this fourth phase in the context of our learning?
Well, I've had a lot of confusion throughout our learning process here. Newness, mastery, level up or decline. I've had lows, I've had highs, you know, I've had good clients and then clients that were not very cooperative. You know, I think, okay, I could do this, and I think, okay, I can't. Is that what we're talking about?
Sure, just, you know, sharing your personal experience, but also how you understand this fourth phase. So we've moved through the initial confusion, increasing confidence, mastery, and typically this is where things start to level off or decline, as we were discussing in the very beginning. So there's a sense of chaos or randomness when the client or the student reaches sort of a plateau, right? So they either gotten to a place of mastery where they are consistently sticking to their practice, their endeavor, their work in the world, or as Randy pointed out, maybe it falls by the wayside and it declines. So I'm curious, maybe Carla, hopefully we've got a better connection. Would you be able to share a personal experience, if you have one, on this fourth phase, where you've been invigorated and excited, and then the newness wore off?
I think I understand what you mean, and I used to have that a lot when I was a dancer, when I was doing that for a living. Because you completely depend on your physical body, and your physical body is very important for your state of mind and vice versa. And especially when you are in the process to learn a new choreography and everything. You go to all those stages of excitement when you get it, rush it, and then suddenly out of the blue the next day, it's gone. And you have to start all over again because your body decides it's enough.
Great. I love how you use the mind-body example, because that's present, right, in everything that we do, and paying attention to the wisdom of our bodies is so absolutely key. Our bodies will never lie to us, but oftentimes we don't listen. So it's a great example of, you know, practicing our listening skills. So thank you. Thank you for sharing. Okay, so any questions from anyone on these four phases that would help your clients into a path of new learning?
Sasha, I think I understand the four phases nicely. I didn't really understand the next paragraph. What does that mean to you? What's the point there?
Okay, give me a second.
Yeah, sorry. Put you on the spot, but...
No worries. Just give me a second to read it. Honestly, have no idea.
Okay.
Book, seriously, I mean, I'm not going to pretend. I'm just going to be truthful. This book is written by Dr. Dave, and, you know, he's out there sometimes. He's way above my level of mastery with some of this content. So I apologize. What I can do is send this to him and get his feedback, and I will definitely do that and pass it along to all of you.
Good. Thanks.
You're welcome. I didn't help you at all, but thanks. Okay. So, you know, at this point in the conversation, I always love to give this example with learning how to drive a stick-shift car as an example of learning. And I learned this model, so to speak, about 12 years ago when I was first getting into coaching and taking my certification. And it just has always stuck with me for some reason. So in the first phase, it's called unconscious incompetence. And that simply means that you don't know what you can't do. The second phase is unconscious competence, which means you don't know what you can do. The third phase is conscious incompetence, and that's when you know what you can't do. And finally, we reach the fourth stage, which is conscious competence, and you know what you can do. So if you think about learning to drive a stick shift, when you're first starting out, it's like my foot, my hand, when do I, you know, how do I sync these things up, right? And then finally, you get to a point after you've practiced and practiced and practiced, gone through the initial confusion, then you build confidence and you feel like you're consistent. Then you're driving a stick shift without even thinking about it. I mean, you're probably talking on your phone too, right? Which we all should not be doing driving, but just the point being that you don't even think about when to press the clutch and when to shift the gears. You're doing it without even thinking about it. It's unconscious. All right, that was just my little example there. Any questions on that? Okay, great. I just want to turn back and just brief.
Yeah, this is not even fair to push the.
That's okay, no worries.
Can you just quickly say what they were again? Unconscious competence.
Unconscious incompetence. So it's like the worst case scenario. Unconscious.
Okay, but you don't is knowing is.
Don't yeah. You don't know what you can't do.
Wait, can you get down? Sorry.
Second one.
Don't know what you can't do.
Unconscious competence, where you don't know what you can do. Third is conscious incompetence, where you know what you can't do, which can be frustrating. And the final one is where we all aspire to be, conscious competence. You know what you can do.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. So just turn back to page 185 just for a moment, and it's just to reiterate the fact that, it takes about 21 to 30 days to change a habit. We spoke about that a few weeks back, and Dan Sullivan, who's a masterful coach, just goes through that a little bit more. So if you haven't read that section, the bottom page 185, that's a great, that's another great learning. Okay, if there aren't any other questions about what we have discussed so far, let's please turn to page 189. And here, now we're going to dive in a little bit to the strategies to deal with change when you have challenging clients. So by challenging, it doesn't mean that the relationship and the collaboration isn't working, but rather when you get to a point with your client, all right, maybe they've plateaued and they're kind of stuck and it's like, what's next? So these are 16 strategies that you can use to help your client shift. And I would like for each of us to take a turn and probably just a minute each. And just look through it if you haven't already. Pick one that speaks to you. Read it and just give your share how you would use this working with one of your clients as a mentor coach.
Sasha?
Yes.
Joyce.
Okay, Joyce, hang on. I think Carla came on first. You can go next, okay?
I have
I have one question, actually. Is it correct that number 5 and 6 is the same thing, or do I have a glitch in my...
No, that's a typo. 5 and 6 are the same. They just, yeah, it's the same one.
I don't think so.
So they are actually 15 steps instead of 16?
You got it.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, this is Genevieve, and I'm just curious because, I mean, if you, they're different. One says experience and one is intuition, and I think those are two, or intention.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you for clarifying. I've got a new book. I've got a new manual that, and I'm not sure I have the same one you guys have. So thank you for clarifying the word. So, Carla, they are different. The client's experience versus the client's intention.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Genevieve. Okay, so who would like to go first?
I would.
I will, Genevieve.
Okay, go ahead, Genevieve, since your line is already unmuted.
I read through these, and I found them very helpful as, you know, just reference and good questions to ask when and that point where we've talked about, you know, like you see something for your client and how can you get them to see your aha kind of thing. So some of these are great questions, and I highlighted about, several of them. But the first one that I highlighted was number 7 about find out from your challenging client what he or she has managed to do in a small way that he or she would want to do more of. And I think that's a fabulous way to, you know, if you're yourself as a coach feeling stuck around a situation, you see something, and it's just a great question to ask, you know, so like something that's working already. You know, just asking your client if, you know, what is it that you've done already, and what would you want to do more of? I think it's a great question to facilitate them moving forward and seeing what can work for them.
Yeah, great insight, Genevieve. So drawing on past experience, what's worked for you in the past, and where have you found success, and how can it support you going forward? That's awesome. Thank you. I think Joyce was next. Everyone will get a turn, so go ahead, Joyce.
I chose number 9, highlight solutions that do not work, along with an empathetic resonance of how frustrating that must be. I had a client who actually walked out the door 5 minutes before this call, and I think she has entered, can you say entered the state of entropy?
Sure.
Oh, okay, because we've met several times and there has been progress, but today it's almost like she definitely was stuck, and it was like all the things we had discussed before she'd forgotten, and she was kind of back in the same place, but not really in the same place. So I kind of went back through things we had discussed at other sessions that we had, and it's like, well, we discussed this, and the little step that she had taken was to do this, this, and this. And then when you came back, you said you had some success with this. And then I also told her about things that weren't working for her that are continuing to happen. And so it's really kind of highlighting what does work and what doesn't. But I also reiterated that she was progressing, that a shift had taken place, and it was just, you know, backpedaling a little bit, but she'd actually made some positive changes.
That's so wonderful. And we talked about empathy last week, putting yourself in your client's shoes. Right,
mm-hmm.
And with the resonance of how frustrating that could be. So, wonderful example. Thank you. Who's next?
This is Jamie. I'll go ahead and go.
Thanks.
So the one that spoke to me the most was number 4, although I would give 2 and 3 were really kind of led into that to me. You are most likely to create action in the client if you do not attempt to do so. And honestly, I think a lot of the efficacy that I have experienced from that particular technique came from being a mom. The now 24-year-old, you know, young woman having gone through the teenage years, but I find it really effective on a somatic level. And maybe that comes from the fact that I'm a real fan of Tara Brach, and my own spiritual mentor has assisted me greatly in just opening to whatever is and allowing that to create the shift. And I find that, for example, with the young woman that I'm working with, this has been something that I've leaned into a lot with her as she continues to let go and move forward, is just allowing her to be exactly where she is and my basically getting out of the way.
Mm. Yeah.
It's been really, really powerful to watch this happen.
Yeah. Like, I love that phrase, getting out of our own way. Because we talked about previously that if the impetus does not come from the client, it won't have the same impact. It won't land the same way. So that's a great example, Jamie. Thanks for sharing. Who would like to go next?
I'll go. This is Christine. I really liked number 15, pattern interruption. Because we all have our patterns, but what I think is so great about this is that you can change patterns that are totally unrelated to the behavior you want to change, and sometimes that creates a shift just doing something differently. Sometimes small changes in our physical habits lead to bigger changes in our emotional habits, even if they're not seemingly related.
Right, and I'm just curious if you have an example of changing
a
pattern.
I do, actually. When I go to the grocery store, I am prone to impulse buys. But when I go to the grocery store, I am very much a creature of habit, and I almost always park in the same spot in the parking lot. If I park somewhere totally different, I stick to my list. I don't buy things on impulse.
So if I'm understanding you correctly, when you get the spot that you've always gotten, which is hard to imagine at a grocery store, I'm not sure how you pull that off.
It's the same general area of the parking
lot. Okay. I'm like, same spot. That's, wow. Parking karma. Anyway, when you park in that general area, you're more prone to impulse. And when you park somewhere else and change your pattern, you stick to your grocery list?
That's exactly it.
Interesting. Wow. I love hearing these personal experiences because we all come from so many different places and have so many different experiences. Thanks, Christine. Who's next?
It's Carla.
Thanks.
Number 16, facilitation. It resonates a lot because I work a lot with facilitation, and my experience with facilitation with my clients is that once they visualize that what they want or what they want to be, it changes so much in their system that it seems like all the obstacles and everything is gone. And if I start working from the point of visualization and then go back to make the steps to get there, that is much easier to do than the other way around, because they already were there and they already have the feeling how it felt and how it was to be there at their goal. So they are much, much more inspired and motivated to work through the steps to achieve it.
Mm. I love that because visualization is really a powerful tool to use as a former athlete. I worked with someone, a coach, who, you know, really showed me the benefits and the value of visualization before preparing for, you know, a competition. And I know a lot of people do that, not just in the sports world, but any performance or any time they have to go up and do anything really in front of a group and speak as how you want it to look. So I love that, Carla, talking about the bigger vision first and then working your way backwards with baby steps.
Yes, and really be there. It's the shamanic way of working because we can do that. Spiritually, we can travel and be in this place. And the only difference is that you have to be physical at that place as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Who has not gone yet? I'm not keeping track. I think we may have a couple people left.
It's a number 13.
Okay.
Invite the client to try something different. I had a client. I invited him to start writing or start writing things down, making a list, and he just could not get it. He's like, I've never written before. I don't know where to start. Where do I start? I'm like, just start right now. Just start writing. Keep it simple and stupid. You know, and I try not to talk like that, but to me it's the easiest thing to do. So number 13 resonates with me.
Yeah, lucky 13. And I think I shared with you our acronym that we use here at Boulder Core Power for our teacher training is KISS, keep it simple. Sometimes we say sweetheart, but it can be K-I-S-1-S. But, yeah, just really starting out simple and going from there. Thanks, Sue. Randy, have you gone or are you our last one to go?
I haven't gone. I'm not sure if anybody else has left, but I will go. I'll pick number six. State your understanding of the client intention as best you can. Listen for responses. I think what struck me about that was sometimes if I'm stuck or just being able to get back to, it's almost like a heart level, like what's the basic focus or direction or heartfelt, you know, movement that one wants to get to, the other person wants to get to, and I think most of the time we have that, so being able to at least focus on that and then not have to worry about all the obstacles, but go back to kind of that heart intention level, I think is good, and to restate and reframe and let that sink in for a person.
Oh, great. We have a little bit of background noise. I don't know, Randy, if that's you, but I love your take on that, and really, in effect, what it's saying here is something we've been learning all along, right from the beginning, to mirror back to your client what you heard, so that they feel seen and heard right from the very beginning. So either with intention or with experience, really that tool will work in a positive way. So thanks. All right. Thanks for your participation, group, team. Any questions on that piece? Okay, before we get... Oh, go ahead, Randy. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Jamie and I had a conversation about this, is the difference between an intention versus a goal. But I guess what I kind of liked about six, and maybe you can clarify it, is that intention seems a little, have more of a softer focus, not quite as specific as a goal might be. Is that how you might describe the differences in this context?
You know, for me, in the word intention came into my life when I became a yogi and I began mindfulness practices. I think prior to that, it was always about goals. I personally feel that they can be interchangeable. I think intention may be manifest a little bit sooner because you can have an intention for, you know, a class or a conversation or something that's happening like immediately. Right. And a goal, you can do the same thing, but typically to me, in my mind, goals are like our SMART goals. They're longer term. They're more, okay. So we've got a little bit of feedback noise. So if you've got some background, go ahead and mute yourself. Thank you. So I'm not sure if that's helpful, Randy and Jamie. I think they can be interchangeable.
Yeah, that's nice. Thanks.
Okay, you're welcome. All right, so we just have a couple minutes here. If everyone can turn to page 190. Again, we still have some background noise, so let me go ahead and meet some people. The last paragraph on page 190, I think, just gives us a nice feel to what we've been discussing today and around change. And I'm just going to read it briefly. Like, the first step for the client who has a fixed finger pointed to others is to acknowledge to yourself the impossibility of changing someone else. And I know for me, I've had that experience. I'm thinking that most of you have of trying to change someone else. I know I failed miserably at that. The assumption that someone or something else must change in order to make the client happy ensures ineffectiveness and frustration. So to refocus on one thing that the client could do himself or herself in the next day or two that would create a change is the best way to go with that. And the shift of focus from outside to inside, from others to oneself, parallels this beautiful serenity prayer, familiar to many of the 12-step groups. I'm not going to go ahead and repeat the prayer. I found this prayer like a long, long time ago when I was a kid, and it didn't really...
We should repeat the prayer. Repeat the prayer. Go ahead, Sasha. Let's repeat it.
Oh, you want me to repeat it? Okay. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. So... powerful, powerful words. Again, this is not in any religious context. You can change, substitute the word God for something that means, that resonates different with you. So I just wanted to, you know, share that. And then on the top of page 191, I mean, this is a beautiful representation of yoga. Changing your mind changes your life. To become your authentic self involves taking risks to make change, experiencing but not giving into fear, releasing judgment and criticism, letting go of assumptions forged at an earlier time, and embracing dreams that bring mastery and accomplishment. So just for a moment, you know, think about all of the ways that our teachers use language around fear, judgment, on the yoga mat and taking risks and challenging yourselves to embrace change. It's not easy, but as mentor coaches, we're actually doing the same thing. We're holding a safe container for our clients to increase confidence that they can get to where they say is important to them. So again, just bringing back the piece of bridging yoga with our coaching. And then finally, on page 193, no discussion here because we've got to get into our call, but just reminders, these are mistakes, common mistakes that people make. So in your coaching, you want to speak clearly, briefly, and simply. listen carefully, remember two ears, one mouth, and regulate your states of mind while you're managing your emotion. So just some reminders there. Okay, so on today's call, Jamie will be coaching Joyce and Carla will lead our feedback discussion. Before we start, would someone quickly name the five steps of our simple coaching model?
Okay, I can do that. Number one, specify the client's agenda. Number two, determine useful intervention moments. Number three, shift the perspective. Number four, frame the session. Number five, follow up.
Great. Thanks, Randy. Okay, so everyone except for Jamie and Joyce, place yourself on mute. Jamie, just give us a minute, just a moment or two, and then go ahead and get started.
Hi, Joyce.
Hi, Jamie.
Ah, there you are.
Here I am. I didn't hear you.
Oh. Is that better?
Yeah, that's great.
Okay. I was on speaker, so I'm no longer on speaker. How are you doing?
Good. I actually just changed into another seat because I thought that would make me relax more.
So, and is it working?
Yeah, I love this. I love the chair I'm sitting in now. And I'm not facing okay. all the things I need to do. I'm good.
Okay. Do you feel like you want to take, you know, a couple of breaths or a minute to settle into your new chair, or would you like to go ahead and kind of launch into things?
I think I'm ready, but thank you for asking that. Often I do
okay.
need it, but I'm good.
Okay. All right, great. So, do you have a particular agenda?
I do. I have one. Okay. Brief, but this is a common theme with me. I've mentioned before in the classes that tomorrow I'm flying to California for a week to take care of my daughter who's having some surgery and, you know, her children and kind of run the household and be as helpful as I can be.
Mm-hmm.
What has happened typically, almost always, is I anticipate what I think they need and then I try so hard to fulfill their needs and make everybody happy that I end up kind of wearing myself out, not doing the things that I know that I should do to keep myself happy and centered and balanced and all of that. And the thing is, they don't expect it. I mean, I know they don't expect it because we always have this conversation. And we all end
mm-hmm.
up feeling frustrated, all of us. So I know this. I know it's happening. And I fall back into that groove. So you mentioned your daughter before. I'm hoping you might have some wisdom for me.
So would you like to focus the session on kind of brainstorming or coming up with a plan in terms of how you might show up differently this time?
Yeah, that's exactly what I need. I can internalize it and pray for it and write about it, but it just doesn't happen with me.
Okay, great. No, I'm thinking of that, the tool of visualizing, if it would be helpful to you for us to just visualize what you would like the situation, the visit to look like.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel clear about how showing up in the way that you have shown up has not worked? Are you clear about kind of what you might be ready to let go of?
I am ready to let go of that.
it doesn't serve me well, and it doesn't make anyone else relaxed and happy, and so I'm ready to let go of that.
So what would a typical day look like?
In how it is in reality?
In where, tell me a little bit more about the context that you're going into. Do you have your own room? Is there an opportunity for you to get away, to go to a class? Tell me a little bit more about what the day might look like.
I can have my own room, but usually one of my grandchildren wants me to sleep with them. So,
okay.
But I have the choice to go back into a room and have a space. I have the choice to go to a yoga class. I have the choice. They live in Griffith Park. I have the choice to go for a hike. I have these choices. For some
mm-hmm.
reason, I don't take those choices. So a typical day would be we all get up. Everybody's kind of crazy running around. She's got four dogs. Her kids, you know, getting their lunch, getting their breakfast, getting them off to school, and then it's just they're busy. And
mm-hmm.
I just try to like be there to help as much as I can. And then someday, you know, then it'll be lunchtime and I haven't eaten anything. And it's not a pretty picture.
Okay. So let's go back to is it possible for you to set an intention in terms of how you would like to show up in this situation and what you need to do in order to make that happen?
Yes.
And what would the intention...
Well, the intention would be for me to be in the moment, to have no expectation at all, just to be as present as I possibly can be, available, and not be so concerned with what I think I should do, like cleaning up and all of that, as I am concerned with just being present to all of them.
Okay. And in order for you, for these qualities, what I would think of as character traits or qualities, for those to happen for you, are there, what would you need to do for yourself in order to be able to be present and to be able to kind of go with the flow and to be able, what was the other thing, being present, available, and in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
What are the things
mm-hmm.
that you need in order for that to happen for you?
Well, I need to eat, for one thing. I
mm-hmm.
need to go to yoga, have some form of exercise. I need to get proper sleep. Actually, that's probably all I need. And I do need to be appreciated. And often that doesn't happen. But I realize that a person can appreciate you if you're doing something they don't value or even care if you did or not.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
I know, that's a big thing, isn't it? That might.
Yeah,
I do. I guess I need to be appreciated. But when I'm doing something and they don't really care if it gets done or not, like she could care less if her house is clean. I, of course, care about a clean house. So, same thing with cooking. To me, that's how I show my love. And she's just not a very domestic person that way. So she doesn't
mm-hmm.
care about it.
But I feel like I'm showing her my love by doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So the craziness of it is expecting to be appreciated for something that this person doesn't even know.
Mm-hmm. There's, I'm going to take just two steps back because there's something that's niggling at me that you mentioned before we started getting into, I think, the very important needs. And that was that choice exists. I heard you say that choice exists within that the situation you're going into, that you could choose to stay in your own room. You could choose to go to a yoga class. You could choose to get, you know, and it be in an environment with proper sleep. What, if anything, has led you to choose or continue to choose what doesn't sound like it's been working for you?
An old pattern. An old pattern. Lack of confidence in my mothering.
Okay.
The thing that happens to me around my children.
Can you describe that a little bit more? Feeling inadequate? Okay.
Yeah, a feeling of like I'm not enough. I can't do enough. And I know how crazy this sounds, but that is the truth.
I guess I am prompted to share just a little story because I really empathize with what you're describing, and especially that need to be appreciated and kind of I spent years going at things in terms of doing what I thought was important and found out that that was not necessarily appreciated by my daughter. So I went to visit her.
Mm-hmm.
She's in the Peace Corps and she's in Zambia, and I went to her hut and I walked in, and the first question that I asked her when I got to her home was, what do you need me to do? What would be helpful? What do you want? And I proceeded for the next 3 days helping her to organize her belongings. And I proceeded for the next 3 days to take instruction from her on exactly how she wanted it organized and where she wanted it put. And that was very new behavior for me. So I share that in the sense of, is there one thing that you might be able to do differently within the context of the visit that could, you know, maybe mix up the pattern a little bit?
Mm-hmm. I could ask that question, which is, I don't know if I asked that question before or not. Like, what do you need from me? What can I do? How can I make you more comfortable? But to change the pattern, she's going to be in bed because she has surgery, and so it's probably going to be a little bit different dynamic. But the thing that I miss the most, now that you're bringing this up, is all this time I spend cleaning or cooking meals in the kitchen, it's time I miss, like, just playing with my grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
Or just visiting, like maybe sitting on her bedside and just having talks and let the rest go. Because she doesn't care about that anyway. So to define it more, I should have something concrete that I can do with this. But
well, I just, can I interrupt just for a second? Exactly. Yeah. And what I heard you, I would like to just reflect back to you what I heard. What I heard were two really clear and very powerful examples of you being in that situation very differently, taking the time to play with your grandchildren, mm-hmm. and literally being with your daughter
mm-hmm.
while she's convalescing, just being mm-hmm. there.
Right. I don't have to do anything.
Ladies, so just 1 minute here to wrap up.
Okay.
Wow, Jamie, you just fast.
And I know. I'm going to just kind of take a highlighter and highlight the last statement that you just made.
Mm-hmm.
I heard you say, I don't have to do anything. And I also heard an intention of wanting to simply be present.
That's what I want. And
so stay with that just for a moment. I would like to suggest that you simply breathe into that. Almost as though we're doing a pose in yoga, and we're going to hold it for 30 seconds. And just breathe into that intention I heard you set and into that possibility of showing up differently.
Ladies, I apologize, but we're going to have
okay.
to hold it there. So I know that's
okay.
an awkward ending with me interrupting. But so if you two would put yourselves on mute, Carla, if you would come off mute and share your insights, what worked? What would you have liked to see more of?
Okay. I heard a lot of good things. Jamie has a clear voice. Her questions are to the point. She framed the challenge that Joyce brought on the table today in a nutshell, perfectly spot on. Her moment of intervention with her own story, I found that superb. And I could feel the change in Joyce when she was listening to the story and recognizing it. The highlight of the last sentence, marvelous as well. The powerful questions were asking how a typical day looked like and asking Joyce for her intention. And the two minor points that I have, but I think it has everything to the 50 minutes thing that we have. In the beginning, I could hear a little bit of hurry in Jamie's questions and not waiting enough for Joyce to speak whatever she was telling. And a little bit of a lot of questions without waiting for answers. That's it.
Thank you, Carla. That's a great example of listening carefully. So I'll share my thoughts on how Jamie can continue to go from good to great, and then we'll hear from Jamie. And if we have time, some other group. So great job, both of you ladies, for showing up in authenticity. Jamie, I thought you did an amazing job, and especially in the beginning, great reflection, and you actually integrated it into a question. not really, I didn't write down all the details of it, but you reflected back to Joyce in the questionnaire, so I thought that was kind of cool. I loved how you offered the tool of visualization for Joyce to sort of create an intention of how she wanted things to look when she goes out to visit her family. Some places that to consider, just remembering what works, what can be framed a little differently, and is your questions are powerful, but they're coming in numerous amounts. So we want to keep it super simple, concise, brief. Just ask one question rather than, a couple of questions, because it loses its effectiveness and it loses its impact. And then when you ask that question, give some space for Joyce to consider, and first of all, how it lands with her, and then for her to share her thoughts on the question. There were still quite a few closed-ended questions that, and it's tricky because you ask something of Joyce and she said yes, but typically this is what happens. They'll say yes or no, and then they'll give more detail. So then really, it's still going on. But I just want to encourage the powerful questions, who, what, when, where, so that you engage the client in facilitating the answers from themselves rather than you saying it and them either agreeing or disagreeing. So just continue to work on the powerful questions, one question at a time. Give a little bit more space for your client's reflection and be okay in the silence, right? So you had a lot of great suggestions, but I would encourage you to frame those questions so that your client comes up with these ahas. And what I heard from that session was that aha moment came when Joyce said she wanted to feel appreciated. And there's 15 minutes, it's like nothing, right? There, it goes by in so quickly. And there's so many pathways you can take based on what your client, the conversation you're having with your client. In this particular instance, I would have liked to have heard more about the appreciation piece and less about her patterns that weren't working. Both can be served, that both can serve the client, but in this short time frame, trying to get to all the five steps, I would have gone more into the appreciation and what that looks like and how can, what has to happen for you to feel appreciated? What is it going to look like when you go to California? How will you know you're feeling appreciated and sort of move in that direction? So I hope that makes sense. I love the connection on the motherhood piece. That was great. So Jamie, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think I really appreciated the feedback, and I felt the same way. I felt extraordinarily, again, pressed with time. And when I'm feeling constricted, the way it comes out is I tend to ask too quickly and not leave the space. So I guess, I can feel into all of the feedback. I'm curious, what Joyce's experience was.
Yeah, we'll give her an opportunity to share in a moment. And I just wanted to acknowledge what you just said. You're right, 15 minutes is so short. And for us to feel successful in reaching the five tools of the simple coaching model, it's extraordinarily challenging, especially when you're still learning. 11 weeks later, we're still learning. 8 years later, 10 years later for me, I'm still learning. So it's just about putting yourself in the situation to have that experience as both coach, client, and in addition to observer. And if you get through the five, great. But if you don't, that doesn't mean that there weren't small successes along the way, right? You're still practicing. You're still practicing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, because I feel like, I could have spent the entire 15 minutes when we got, like you said, to the appreciation place on trying to uncover what does that mean.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
So, yeah.
Joyce, how did that feel to you? What worked? What maybe did you want more of from Jamie, if anything?
I felt very comfortable with Jamie. I felt supported by her. I felt that she understood what I was talking about. So it was kind of an easy dialogue that way. I didn't feel like I needed to explain it all away. And I liked how she began it. And then I especially liked when she said, well, would you like for us to brainstorm about this? And then the visualization, and she was the one, because she did, I know, I understood the constraints of, like, this time frame, so I didn't mind her, interrupting or whatever. But when I said, and to feel appreciated, I think I keep that hidden in my brain, because I don't want to be that kind of person that just wants to be appreciated, but there it is. So she did bring that out, and I am really mindful of that. So I have something that I took away from it, really a lot that I took away from it. I'm going to focus on just being there and not doing anything because I don't need to do anything. So I think it was, you were excellent, Jamie.
Thanks, Joyce. And what I wanted to add, now that you mentioned it, when you got to the appreciation piece, I think that's a place to take pause and take a breath because it has an emotional charge around it. And it's a place to feel in to your client's somatic sensations. You know, again, the restriction of time, but these are just examples. You know, hopefully you're taking notes, and when the situation comes up in another context, you'll use this as an example to follow. When something has an emotional charge around it, it's a time to pause and take a breath, both coach and client. So in the 90 seconds that we have left before I go over the homework, would anyone else on the call like to give Jamie any feedback that would be useful?
This is Randy.
Okay.
I think one thing that was very touching to me was sort of yoga teacher to yoga teacher at the end. I know there was ran out of time, but that idea of just kind of breathing into it and treating it as a pose, I thought the analogy was very creative.
Great. Thanks, Randy. All right. Great job, everyone. Thank you, as always, for your attention, energy, contributions, experiences. The homework is on the syllabus, and it's a little bit different than the previous weeks as we move into our final week together next week. We'd like for you to reflect on this 12-week journey and the impact it has had on you both personally and professionally. So I really encourage you to take some time with this and really be in that space of intention and reflection, and we'll have time to share. The group, everyone will have time to share this piece of their homework next week because I think it's really important. And we may do it at the end of the call. I'm not sure. But it's a great way to close out our time together. So that's your homework. I'm really excited to share with you that I'm leaving on Thursday through the weekend to go to Ojai, California. if you guys know where that is, to participate in off the mat into the world's advanced leadership training. So I get to go hang out with that community and my teachers and, you know, come back with hopefully lots of gems of wisdom and inspiration. So happy election day. I hope everyone voted and have a great week. And I will look forward to our final call together next week. Namaste, everyone.
Namaste.
Hey, bye, everyone. Namaste.
Namaste.
Namaste.